Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
You are listening to a Hillbilly Horror Stories classic episode.
It's about to be a fun ride. Follow along, watch as we slide. Paranormal just hit the lights. Goosebumps all through the night. Mix in just a little bit of twang. That girl sure can't do a thing. Together, hillbillies go insane. Laugh so hard it'll hurt your brain. Podcast you won't ever change. These two here, they got the recipe. Sat on back and listen in to some of our darkest mysteries, ain't.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. And now here's your host, Jerry and Tracy Pauly, and their dog Ninja.
Hello everyone, my name is Karen Wickiam, and I am the host of STAT, Shocking Traumas and Treatments, and you are about to listen to our favorite hillbillies, Jerry and Tracy, on Hillbilly Horror Stories.
Welcome everyone to episode 51 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. My name is Jerry and I am joined once again this week by Tracy.
Hey guys, I miss you all so much.
She is back from Vegas. We still have a roof over her head, so I guess it was not that bad of a trip.
It was hot as balls out there, let me tell you. Hot, 112 degrees. And I don't play that stuff, but thank God for the casinos. I just ducked in there, so it was all good.
Yeah, ducked in there for several hours at a time.
Yeah, like 24/7. No, except for one time my boss took us really on a really bad trip to find something. I kept saying, we're going the wrong way. And man, he'd like to warm me out, that's all I'm going to say, because it was a long, hot walk.
I'd like to start off, obviously, the way we always do, with a shout out to our military and civil servants. We had one new Patreon supporter this week, Annette, I'm assuming it's Ushman. I'm probably wrong on that because I usually am. We were a little short on the iTunes review, so it won't take us that long to get through these. We had Jeray Ray, Trini Martinez, who also bought a t-shirt. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
AMDFYT43578. That's very catchy. I don't know how you came up with that.
I know. I kind of feel like I want to sing it.
But that was actually a really good review because it was talking about our 50th episode and, mm-hmm. and hoping for 50 more. So it was probably the longest review we've had on Facebook. iTunes.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate that.
Callie at Heart99 and C2Main. I think that's how it looks like mm-hmm. it's how it be pronounced. And before we get any further in some exciting news for upcoming shows, I think Tracy has some things to say.
Well, I just wanted to say I really did miss you guys. I feel like I haven't been on the podcast in like a month. But I wanted to thank all my kids for stepping in and taking over. They did an awesome job. I was so very proud of them. And I know they would like to get back on again. And I just want to say thank you guys for listening. And I'm glad to be back.
Easy enough. Well, I would like to second that because I know I've thanked them personally, but on the show, I would like to say thank you because I think they did an excellent job. We've
gotten sure did.
A lot of good reviews. And honestly, through Saturday, this was our most listened to show for the first 6 days it was up. So I guess you guys must have liked it too.
Yeah. Hopefully not more than me, but that's okay if you did because I understand.
Okay, here's the deal. A lot of people send us requests, and we get a lot of the same ones. And we don't do those shows. And people are like, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that show? Because they think we should be because it's a popular story. Well, the main reason is, and I've not come public with this on the show.
Oh, my God, what are you going to say?
But I've been saving all those shows. I've been hoarding them.
Hoarder.
Because August is our one-year anniversary. And why do an anniversary show when we can do an anniversary month?
No.
Therefore, and once again, that's a complete surprise to Tracy.
Yeah.
Just like the stories.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not in his little head, so I don't know what the heck.
I'm sure I've told her that three or four times, and she's probably just neglected.
Well, he probably has, but.
But here's what we're going to do. All these stories that you guys have been sending, you're going to be excited because we're going to blast them all out in August. Not only are we going to do them, but most of the shows in August will probably be between an hour and a half and 2 hours long. Because not only are we going to do the stories you want, we're going to cram them packed. I have lots of special guests coming. And like I said, we've got just loads of stuff for you guys. We're going to have some giveaways. I signed on with a headphone company that's supposed to be the newest, hottest thing. They're giving me some headphones to give away to you guys.
Nice.
We're going to have fun. We'll probably give away a couple of t-shirts, but we're going to have fun stuff all this month. You want to hear some of the stories that are coming up?
Yeah. Surprise me.
Well, it will be a surprise anyway. How about the Bermuda Triangle?
Oh.
Tons of requests for that since we started this show.
I think it's where my dang scrub is.
It may very well be.
That's where my scrub is. It's in the triangle.
The true story of The Conjuring. Why have we waited on this one? We've done The Conjuring 2. We've done a bunch of the Warren stuff. This one is the one that takes the cake, as far as I'm concerned. This has got to do with the Perrin family. I am working on, nothing is etched in stone yet, but I'm working on getting an interview with the daughter, one of the Perrin daughters who actually wrote a book about this to try to get her on.
Oh, wow, that would be amazing.
The goal is to do that show for our actual anniversary show, which will be the 53rd episode, 2 weeks away. If I can get her lined up, we're going to do the true story of The Conjuring, have her interview, and we're also going to do a story on another popular one, Ed and Lorraine Warren. Everybody wants to know about the Warrens, and they know all their cases, and that's one of the other stories we got coming up. The Black Monk House over in Great Britain may be the most haunted place in the world. People have requested that, especially our British listeners. We are going to do a story on the Black Monk House. And probably the most requested of all of them, the Mothman.
Oh.
We're going to do that, and I know that's been done to death, but we're going to try to put a different spin on it. And we'll do a little more in-depth and cover some stuff on that. I was going to do Edgar Casey, which is a Kentucky boy, and most of you out there who are into the paranormal will know exactly who that is. But one of my good friends, Justin Rimmel, is in the process of doing a 4-part episode. And he has got so many details.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah, I decided to back out of that one, but I will refer people who are interested in Edgar Casey to listen to his show, Mysterious Circumstances. Why am I bringing that up? Because Justin is also going to be a special guest for this month of August. Justin's show, Mysterious Circumstances, is completely awesome. Covers some true crime, covers some paranormal. But he covered a paranormal story on Donnie Decker, the Rain Man. Not to be confused with Dustin Hoffman. I thought that's who that was. But, you know, I'm thinking the whole time, when does he say 10 minutes to Wapner? But that wasn't the story.
He's a good teller of a story, too.
Yeah, Justin, a lot of people compare us as far as our storytelling and technique to each other. That's about where the comparison stopped, because he's like, he's like 10 times better looking than I am.
He's got hair.
Yeah.
You're good looking, baby.
I said 10 times better. That's what I said.
Oh, come on now.
Regardless. So Justin, we actually did our interview last night. It was 40 minutes long. And the majority, it wasn't just an interview. So I know how you guys are about interviews. We did about a 10-minute interview, so he'd tell you about his show. But the other 30 minutes or so was him actually telling this story.
Mm-hmm. It was good.
Yeah,
real good.
So he told a complete story. I pretty much left him alone. We'll throw that on to one of the shows. Another guest we got coming on, Chris Cogswell, the mad scientist. If any of you listen to that, Chris is completely over my head. He is a true scientist, and he is way too smart for me. So every show that I listen to of his, I follow about 80% of it, and he loses me for 20% of it.
Oh, he is for real.
But he's actually going to come on the same show and try to debunk what we just heard from Justin. So I think that would be cool.
That's going to be fun.
A couple of the other big ones we got coming on in the month of August, Diane and Denise from our buddies from History Goes Bump.
Good.
Should have had them on a long time ago, but once again, I was saving them. And there was another real big one that some of you, I'm going to say most of you, will probably know. Dina Marie, the host of Twisted Philly, one of my favorite podcasts. And we've been trying to get this worked out for a while, and we've got it set up. So that's what we got for August. We've got all those stories, and there's going to be more. But that's the big names out there. So that's what we got.
Yay, I'm excited.
Bunch of big guests, and I'm still working.
And that's your birthday month.
Yep, that's my birthday month. And
what a good present.
And it's Kevin Tuttle's birthday, which is the anniversary of when we started this, which was the reason we chose that day.
Yes.
So are we ready to get on with this show?
Let's get it on.
You guys, I know we hear from you guys when we do these kind of stories that are not as popular because you like the
popular stories.
they like the popular stories, but they also like to hear about the ones that they've never heard about. Mm-hmm. And I think what we've got tonight is one that most of you are probably going to be unfamiliar with. So you'll get a big kick out of it.
Okay.
Well, you look surprised.
No, I'm not surprised at all this time for once.
So let's talk about the Byron Street Poltergeist, also known as the Runcorn thing. Right. Runcorn's one word. Runcorn. It's in
Great Britain. Is it something that runs in the corn?
It is not.
Oh.
I don't even know if they grow corn in Great Britain.
Oh, I don't know either. That's interesting. I like to know that.
So anyway, Runcorn is in the UK, and this happened in August of 1952. Just to give you a little background on who is living at this house, you've got Sam Jones, who's 68 years old. You've got his sister-in-law, Lucy Jones, and what happened to sister-in-law? His brother had passed away, so I guess he had his sister-in-law stay with him.
Oh, that was nice.
He had his grandson, John, his granddaughter, Eileen, Ellen Whittle. Now, Ellen was like a middle-aged woman that was like a boarder, so she was just staying there and paying them to stay
paying
there.
Paying rent or something.
Right, and because she was paying rent, she got her own bedroom, which wouldn't be that big of a deal normally, but
I was going to say, that's kind of a lot of people in that house.
You had a lot of people in the house. It was a three-bedroom house. So what the layout was, Ellen got her own room because she was obviously paying. And then one of the other bedrooms, you had Sam and John. And then in the last bedroom, you had Eileen and Lucy. So that was the typical arrangements. The difference, though, on this particular night is they had some relatives in. It was Sam's actual son and his wife came to visit. So they gave them one of the bedrooms. So what you had in one room, one bedroom with two beds, you had Sam and John actually sleeping in one bed. And in the same room in the other bed, you had Lucy and Eileen actually sleeping there. So you got four people, one bedroom, and that's going to give you the layout of what happens that night. They're in the bed. They're kind of just, you know, starting to kind of lay down and settle down. And Lucy thinks she hears something, some kind of a noise coming from the dresser.
Hmm.
They flip on the lights. Sam checks out the dresser. He's like, there's nothing going on here. So they go back to bed. Well, about that time, they start hearing the scratching and stuff, and it gets pretty loud. It sounds like that, you know, something's actually inside the dresser trying to claw its way out.
Like mice?
Well, I mean, something.
Oh.
But it was enough where it freaked them out, so they go into the next room, and they just kind of waited it out a little bit. Mm-hmm. It stops. They're like, okay, cool, there's no more noise. Let's go back in there and lay down again. They go in there and lay down, and they're just in there for a short time, and it starts again. And at this point in time, it kind of freaks them out to the point where they didn't get any sleep that night at all.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
So the next night was even worse. They're trying to go in there and sleep. And the same, it's the same setup. It's all four of them in the bedroom mm-hmm. again. This time, though, the drawers would, they could hear the drawers pull out, kind of rattle a little bit, and then slam shut.
What the heck?
Yeah.
And no mice can do that.
Yeah, not only that, now the dresser starts rocking back and forth.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is like a heavy dresser.
Oh,
this is like a big, you know, and I don't know about all over the world. I know in Great Britain, and I know in some of the other parts of the world, they call a dresser a dressing table. So it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
If we say dresser and you're in another part of the world and you don't, not sure exactly what we're talking about a dressing table slash dresser. They're the same depending on where you're at.
Oh, cool.
Found it out when we lived in the Virgin Islands when people kept coming in and asking for dressing tables. And I'm like,
oh, and you didn't know what that
was. I'm like,
what
the hell is a dressing table? But it was a dresser is what a dressing table is.
Oh, that is so interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, they started having that problem. They did the same thing. They leave. They come back. And now they start hearing this thing crashing back and forth on the wall. They flip on the lights. This thing is now about a foot away from the wall. It's moved itself a foot away from the wall, something that weighs a ton. And over the next several days, they start hearing knocking now. So that the scratching is still there, but now they're hearing knocking, and the knocking's coming from all over the house.
Oh, wow. That's rude.
Yeah. And Sam Jones has lived in this house for 35 years. And he's had the dresser for 42 years, and he's never had any kind of occurrences before.
No kidding.
Yet.
I wonder why all of a sudden.
I don't know. So what happens is they start hearing this again. He don't know what else to do, so he calls the police.
Well,
I don't know what the police are supposed to do.
Well, I don't know either.
But that's what he does. So he calls the police, and they come in. They start trying stuff. Like, they took tape mm-hmm. and they put it over top of the doors.
Oh, to try to keep
the drawers
shut.
Yeah, mm-hmm. they held them over top of the drawers. They took a glass and put it on top of the dresser
mm-hmm.
just to see what was happening. Because keep in mind, this stuff only happens when the lights are off. And initially, the police think, okay, these guys are doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So the plan was they wanted to make sure to keep an eye on. So they were keeping an eye on the kids. And I say kids, but John was actually 17 years old, and he was actually the youngest of the bunch. But
mm-hmm.
they wanted to make sure that they weren't physically doing it. So they were trying to keep an eye on him, and they'd turn the lights off, and the stuff would start happening, right? At one point in time, you could hear a loud crash where the glass fell off the dresser. They flip on the lights. There's, you know, it sounded like it was way worse than that, but when they actually flipped on the lights, it was just that glass
mm-hmm.
had went off and broke. And even though they could hear the drawers smashing and back and forth, the tape hadn't been taken off of them.
Get out.
So it's like the noise was there, but there really wouldn't.
Oh my gosh, there are ghosts with skills.
Yeah. There was, at one point, there was a chest of drawers. For those of you in other parts of the country, that's called a chest of drawers. Well, that didn't have a different name. So.
I know. That's a funny name. I think that's a funny name anyway.
You know, when you live in the South.
What?
And you got hicks are all around you, like my family. I grew up, I was probably 16 or 17 years old before I realized it was chest of drawers.
What do you think it was?
Chester drawers.
Chester drawers, I know.
Chester drawers. That's like the name of a pedophile.
Oh my gosh.
Hey kids, I got some candy. That's me, Chester. Chester drawers.
Oh, ew. That was kind of creepy.
That's my pedophile voice.
Oh, that's just, let's not do that no more. That's wrong.
Pedophiles are bad.
Like,
that goes without saying.
Pedophiles are bad.
Yeah, that goes without saying, but pedophiles are bad. And I was an ugly kid, so.
You was ugly? Yeah. You was not ugly.
Pedophiles didn't have, I mean, they would come by in their little van and giving candy to the other kids. I'm like, hey, I like candy too. And they just drove off.
Aww.
So anyways.
You poor thing.
I know. So.
Well, you're goofy.
I know. Way to break the mood. So they're sitting there, and they got this chest of drawers on top of the stairs. Two burly police officers, and they're holding, like, trying to hold this chest of drawers down, and it knocks them off. They just get knocked off of it out of the blue.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, why aren't they just getting rid of that thing?
Well, then that's a whole different thing. That was a chest, not the dresser.
Oh.
See, I made that clarification earlier.
Chest
of drawers, not the dresser. Yeah. Anyway, so that was the big thing going on there. So they call in this, he's a medium by the name of Philip France, and they wanted him to kind of, you know, take a look around. So he has a seance. He claims that when he was in the room, because he wanted to go to the bedroom by himself, because that's where most of the occurrences were.
Mm-hmm.
He goes in there, and he claims that there was stuff being thrown around. There was an alarm clock that fell and hit the floor and all stuff, and he was the only one in there.
So stuff flying through the air.
Yeah, there's stuff flying through the air now.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, when all this went on, the whole thing was that Sam Jones, he didn't want any kind of media attention or anything. He just wanted to keep this low key because,
yeah,
you know, back in the 50s, obviously, you're going to be looked at as a kook or something,
yeah,
if you, you know, had something like going on. But regardless, somehow or another, it made it to the newspaper. There was an article written. And they just basically listed it as an odd occurrence that had been resolved. But that was still enough to pique people's interest as to what was going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so at this point, though, it was starting to look like the seance did something because things had kind of calmed down. So they're thinking, hey, finally. And now they were able to lay down and get some sleep, and it was the first time in like 4 days they were able to get any sleep. 3 weeks later, it returned.
Oh, so it stayed away for 3 weeks?
Yeah. So now that it returns, the papers start getting wind of it again, and now they start to call it the Runcorn thing.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's where the name came from. Now you got the same thing. The dresser would move from side to side. The drawer would shoot out. And people, I guess the normal thought process was that this was a hoax. It was just something that was they were trying to do for attention for whatever reason. And what you would have is people starting to gather outside the house, and sometimes as many as 100 people out there trying to get a glimpse of this thing just in case. And they even started calling it Juker, which was supposedly a cross of the word spook and Joker.
Uh-huh.
That was how assured that people were that it was some kind of a hoax.
Yeah, but the thing didn't happen till at night, so how are they going to see it?
Well, and then that's the whole thing, is what they were trying to do is they would show up with flashlights and stuff. Now, they called them torches, but
Oh. It's
basically a flashlight because Yeah. Nobody's, you know, it's not Frankenstein or nothing that run down the street with torches. It's 1950s.
Right.
So they were showing up in flashlights and stuff trying to see it. What's happening with Sam is he got tired of this media attention, because with the media attention now, it was making him look like an idiot.
Right.
And he basically was inviting it. He told everybody, hey, come take a look for yourself. You want to experience what we experience? Come experience it.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually had people doing it. Like I said, at one time they had over 100 people, and hell, they were walking up and, you know, up through the steps. You had a line going out of the house. And the problem was, obviously, like you said, it only happened with the lights off, so they brought flashlights. When you've got the situation where everything just happens in the dark, it makes it a whole lot harder to believe, because how can you really see or you know, discredit anything when you've got,
mm-hmm,
you know, the darkness? So that was the situation we had. Most people thought that John was the person creating it, which was a 17-year-old. Who knows why he would do that, but, you know, there was just that group of people started focusing on him because, you know, teenagers mm-hmm, play pranks, and it just made sense that if it was going to be one, he would be the one. They even had people sit on him while these things were happening to make sure that he wasn't getting out of bed
or
doing it.
So then when they were there, did the other people experience it?
Yeah, there was lots of times where people experienced
it.
Where this really takes a turn is there was a reverend by the name of Stevens. And he was, I'm trying to think of it, he was a Methodist preacher. W.H. Stevens was his name, but he was a Methodist mm-hmm, preacher. But he also was a member of the Society for Physical Research, which is a group that's been around literally since like the early 1800s.
Oh, really?
This thing is probably the most acclaimed paranormal, not really paranormal, but that's kind of where it's lumped in today, but it's, you know, as far as those type of things, it's the biggest group and the most acclaimed that England has. And this guy has been a member of it for years. Well, he was fascinated by these type of things, and he'd read up on things, but this is the first time that something like this ever just happened right in his own backyard.
Oh, cool.
So he was able to actually go and be a part of it. So he contacted him, and on Monday 22nd of September, he came over to check it out. Now, keep in mind, he's fascinated by this, but he's a skeptic. He doesn't believe that any of this stuff really exists, but he also can't prove that it doesn't, and now he's got a chance to see for himself. Now, John had invited a friend over that night, a guy by the name of John Barry, that he'd just recently befriended to come spend the night. His sister, Eileen, has since now moved out of the house.
Okay.
They moved her out. She's been out for a little bit until all this was going to be resolved. So, obviously, Reverend Stevens, he comes in, and he was going to do an investigation, which you would hope would be private, but by this time, there's like 300 people.
Oh, I was going to say, everybody had to know.
Oh, yeah, there's like 300 people now, and they're waiting outside the house.
It's like you can't even go to the bathroom in peace.
No, literally. And, you know, so he goes out, he turns the lights off, he's got the boys are in the bed, everybody's, it's almost like they're doing a movie, okay, everybody take their places.
So yeah.
Everybody's in the beds and stuff they're normally in. He turns the lights off, and it starts. He starts hearing the scratching, he's got the drawers shooting out, he flips on the light real quick, and everything stopped. Then he looks, and the dresser is now moved away from the wall. He's pretty convinced at this point that nobody could have done anything because he's right there.
Yeah.
So now he turns the light off again. The dresser starts shaking so violently and bouncing back and forth that it starts knocking plaster out of the ceiling from the room underneath of it.
Oh, gosh.
An alarm clock flies across the floor and hits the ground. A dictionary hits the reverend in the head.
Oh, dang.
Yep. Then there was a heavy box. I don't know what type of box. It just said it was a heavy box that turns over. All this is happening right there in the time that Reverend Stevens is there.
I bet that other John was like, hey, what'd I get myself into?
Well, he's really going to get into it now, because that's the next thing, is both of the boys kind of levitated from their bed and was thrown into the floor, including the other John.
Oh, cool.
By now, this story is reaching like all over the world. And some people in Germany said that they know how to get rid of a poltergeist. And they actually sent a letter, but somewhere en route, the letter was opened. And when they got the directions on how to get rid of it, there was a page missing.
Oh, stop it.
Yep. I mean,
I cannot even trust the U.S. mail.
Well, first of all, this was England.
Oh, yeah. With the British mail.
And like I said, you know, because everything was happening at night, it just caused the skepticism to really be up. So now you've got, one night, you've got some local businessmen that were using a bright lantern to see what was going on. They can actually see with the lantern the dresser
coming back and forth
and smacking. So that was the first real glimpse that somebody actually got of it happening with some light on it.
Oh, wow.
They also noticed that there was a box that was over top of the bed. I think it was John's bed. And it was just like suspended in midair.
Oh.
So they saw that. Sometimes they would say you would see four really dim specks of light in the room when the activity was going. Like you, it's almost like, I think when you close
like
your eyes.
Like eyeballs?
Something. Yeah. Like what's that? What those things called? Little floaties?
Oh, floaties, yeah.
So I guess that's kind of what it was. Shortly after this, tragedy hit the household, because we talked about Ellen Whittle. She was the one who is, you know, paying room and board to stay there.
Yeah.
She'd been there for 15 years at this point. On October 22nd, she was walking up the hill, up at Runcorn Hill. She was with a gentleman. I can't remember his name, to be honest with you, but she was walking with a guy. They both slip and they fall into a quarry called Frog's Mouth. That's not funny.
Okay. Sorry.
But it was frog. It was the sliminess probably slipped it. But anyways, they slip, they fall down there. It's like 24, 25 feet.
That's a lot.
And the gentleman she was with, he actually was in the hospital for 3 months. And Ellen, unfortunately, passed away from her injuries the very next day.
Aw.
There was no connection as far as we know, to anything going on in the house. And what happened there. Some people had pointed to possible suicide.
What?
Which doesn't really make sense because she was with somebody and they both fell off. It just depends.
How do you fall off of whatever?
Well, a quarry. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't there, obviously.
Well.
Or born at that time.
Could have been.
No.
That's really weird, though. I mean, you could almost say, yeah, I guess it doesn't really have anything to do with the house, but maybe they were, maybe she was cursed somehow.
Well, it's funny that you mention that because it's not necessarily cursed, but, you know, sometimes these things attach themselves.
Yeah.
And if there is a poltergeist or some type of a spirit or demon or something like that, it wouldn't be unusual for them to follow somebody. Mm-hmm. And we'll find out more about that later. But, I mean, there was some speculation that maybe this thing was attached to her. And why would people even think that? Mainly because after her death, everything calmed down a little bit.
Really?
Now, the fact that it calmed down wasn't necessarily a good thing timing-wise for right now, because just right after her death, BBC kind of came in there. They had, I can't remember the guy's name, but he was like an acclaimed BBC radio host, and he's just known for his research and stuff. He actually showed up at the house, and they were, you know, wanting mm-hmm. to do some recording and see what was going on, and nothing happened for 4 weeks. Nothing.
Oh. That sucks.
So you got all these important people there to do the article, and you've got it all built up that all this stuff is happening, and they show up, and it's like,
and they're like, I wish you weren't a lawyer.
It's like a damn frog off of the
Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, off of the Warner Brothers.
Hello, my darling. Hello, my baby.
The one where the frog would dance as soon as the guy would show it to somebody, and just sit there like a bump on a log.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, nothing happens for 4 weeks. On 26th of November, Richard Winnington Egan, now this guy was like a newspaper reporter that was like the shit. I mean, this guy was like, he knew his stuff, and he took a lot of pride in trying to debunk this. So he comes in. Well, during one of the times where they're doing the same thing, you know, they got the lights off, they're doing this and that. He turns his flashlight on real quick, right after they hear a knocking sound. And he sees John, the 17-year-old, quickly sticking his hand back underneath the blankets. So it looks like that maybe he was knocking and hurried up trying to get his hands back under the blankets, and he got caught.
A turd.
Well, that's all that it took for this guy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because this guy was like, you know, uh-huh, we know what's going on. So then you got three reporters and a local pub owner that's actually in the house, and they see Sam throwing a book. They catch him throwing a book across the room. Now, when this happens, he says that he threw it out of anger. It wasn't something he mm-hmm. was trying to perpetrate as, you know, something that the ghost had done or the poltergeist. He was just saying he was pissed off and he threw the book. Needless to say, you've got the big people in town, and now you've got, you know, one of the kids knocking, looks like he's knocking purposely, and you catch this guy throwing a book. It doesn't matter how much evidence you actually have on the good side, how many people have seen the stuff that you can't explain. That's all it really takes to debunk something like that. You know, one little negative like it is enough for people to say the whole thing's a fraud.
Yeah.
But that's not the thing of it is, it's not uncommon in poltergeist cases like this. You got to look at it from this standpoint. This guy looks like a complete idiot at this point because he's got all these people in there. It's been 4 weeks.
Who the?
Sam.
Oh, okay.
There's not a damn thing happening, and he looks like an idiot. So these people are probably under pressure, so they try to make it look like something happens just to save face.
Mm.
It happened in the Enfield case. You know, the girls got caught bending spoons in that one.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they even admitted down the road, the one girl, she admitted down the road recently that they even faked some of the sounds and all that stuff just to keep it interesting. But the majority of that stuff actually happened. Mm-hmm. But once you got that one thing throws the,
messes
you know,
up everything.
It makes the whole thing less credible. So you got that situation going on. Oddly enough, everything really stopped except for one other occurrence, which happened December 13th when the bedroom carpet folded up on its own. And that was it.
What?
For that part of it. But there's a twist to this. At the same time that all this was going on, there was a pig farm on Heath Road that were having occurrences at the same time they were having occurrences.
Oh, neither one knew, or that guy didn't tell about it?
Mm-hmm. Oh. And that's going to become even more weird in a minute. So let's talk about the pig farm. It was owned by Harold Crowther. He says that on August 10th, he witnessed the ghost of his father-in-law walking around the farm, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, shortly after that, he goes out and he's got, you know, a pig going crazy. It's trying to jump out of the pen, and then you got a bunch of other pigs having a commotion, and he looks and there's three dead pigs.
Wow.
And he can't really see anything that's wrong with it. He calls in the vet. And the vet checks them out, and the vet says that the only thing he can find with them, they all have crushed windpipes. But he don't think that's the death of them. From everything that he sees, it's almost like they were scared to death.
Oh, gosh.
Right.
Well, how in the heck do they get crushed windpipes?
I have no idea.
Wow.
So what you got is, over the next couple of weeks, all 53 pigs that he have all died by the exact same mysterious circumstances.
Oh, Lord. Big barbecue coming on.
Apparently. He also had a cow that he goes out to check, and it was like it was freaked out. It had bulging eyes. It was covered with sweat. And no clue what was wrong. There wasn't anything around it. Should have been able to scare it. And then from that day on, that cow never gave milk.
Oh.
It sounds like a really bad English nursery rhyme.
That does. That would be scary to me as a kid if I heard that.
So right after the dead pig things happen, he notices that there's a black cloud that starts to appear. And they see it inside the house, they see it outside the house. Not only that, his wife also saw this black cloud.
You mean like Schlepp Rock?
I don't know.
Wowsy, wowsy.
I don't think that was...
That was that what thing? That was that dog.
Yeah.
Droopy.
Anyway, so yeah, they start seeing this this black cloud everywhere. And at one point in time, this is where things take that little twist I was telling you about. Because Mr. Crowther used to go over to Sam Jones's house all the time because Sam Jones worked at this pig farm
Crowther.
And because Mr. Crowther used to go over all the time, he said he saw it one time over top of John's bed.
The cloud?
The cloud. And that's not the cloud like we, you know, today with iPads and stuff, with stuff stored up there. It's a whole different cloud.
And it's just a cloud, like no rain, just a cloud, right?
Mm-hmm. And he said that he had seen it one time in his house, and it actually spoke to him right before it threw his coat in the air. And oddly enough, the last time that he saw this cloud was December 13th, which is also the last day that they had an occurrence at the other house. When the carpet rolled up.
Daggone, that's... And that was it?
That was it.
Nobody saw the cloud again?
Nope, that was it.
I don't know why he had to kill the pigs.
Well, and he did say that on the last day that he was being attacked by the cloud, that it strangled him. He said one time it tried to strangle him. It was in his bedroom. It tried to strangle him while I was in the bed, and when he woke up, it just went out the window real quick. And then this time, he said he was being attacked. Said it was a 7-foot cloud that had prong-like horns, is what he could see out of the cloud.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And at one point in time, when he could see it out in the field, that his dog saw it, and they ran out, and they started to, like, jump at it. And when they did, it just disappeared, and that was it. That was the last time they saw it.
Wow. I guess it had its revenge and moved on.
So
crazy.
Let's start trying to tie some pieces together. What are some theories on this? Well, some people, if you want to lean the hoax side, some people say that Harold Crowther and Sam Jones were in on this together because they both were having semi-occurrences same time. They both visited each other. If they were trying to get publicity and maybe some kind of a book deal or... You know, which that really wasn't that big of a deal back in the 50s, get book deals and stuff. It's not like it is these days.
You mean with the whole thing or just the cloud thing?
No, the whole thing.
But that can't be, because how do the drawers all come in and out? I mean, that's, who does that?
Well, I mean, they still did get caught doing some stuff.
Well, yeah, but not the drawer thing.
Well, I mean, could just be they figured out a way to be able to do it without, you know. But I'm with you. I'm with you on that one. So the other theory is you've got the whole poltergeist thing with, once again, what have we talked about before on this show with poltergeist? Most times when you have poltergeist activity, there's usually teenagers in the house, and there's usually some kind of major occurrences going on, like the Enfield case. Mm-hmm. You had the dad had left. There was a messy divorce. You had the two kids with all of their pent-up energy. And then you've got the other poltergeist cases out there, which usually involve just situations where there's puberty involved, mm-hmm. or just a lot of things. Well, John's in that same situation. He's living in a house. Think about this. He's living in a house where he has to share a bed with his grandpa. He doesn't have any privacy. Mm-hmm. It's a really cramped house. You've got the little chick. You've got, you know, his grandpa staying there. Then you've got the other two people. Then all of a sudden, his sister moves out of the house. The widow lady dies. Mm-hmm. Then grandpa, when that happens, grandpa starts sleeping upstairs, and he's able to get a room by himself. Then he gets his little friend, the other John kid that was spending the night and everything, he gets him. Well, is it possible that that's why things started calming down? Is because now that his life has changed and it's a little better than what it was? Uh-huh. Because
that's true, I guess.
Plus, supposedly, he was going to be going into the Army, mm-hmm. and he was really anxious about that.
Yeah, so he was going to be out of there soon anyway.
Right. So, I mean, but the thing of it is, you know, if you're worried about going into the Army because you're getting ready to be 18, and then you're in a cramped house, and, you know, he'd lost his parents. That's why he was staying there to begin with. He'd been under a lot of stress, and at that age, who knows. It is interesting, though, to point out that most poltergeist cases are surrounded around women, young girls.
Oh, no kidding. They're
13 to 18-year-old girls. Even goes back to when you think about the whole story with what's the one in Tennessee, the Bell Witch deal. You know, that was a young girl.
Well, you know, now that you say that, a lot of stuff that we've done and told about have a lot of women.
Yeah.
That, wow. That's really, wonder why.
Well, but that's, I don't know, women are, you know, start PMSing and shit.
Well, so we draw the demons in.
That's what it is. some people thought that maybe it was Crowther that brought it in. Maybe he was the one that had the demon and stuff at his place. Mm-hmm. And then when he was coming over to visit all the time, maybe he brought the demon with him.
Oh.
You know, then there's people that said maybe it was the widow, Miss Widow, Ellen Widow. Maybe she was the one that had the demon, and that's why it's, you know, slacked off and everything
after
when she died.
Died.
Yeah. So there's 1,000 different things that it could be, but what we really know is for the most part, it's unexplained.
Yeah. That's really so scary.
And I think it's a fascinating story, and it's hard to find research on. Mm-hmm. There's really not a lot of stuff on it. If you go to YouTube, there's one video.
One video. That's so, I wonder why
and
that
the,
is.
You know, I don't know. It's one of the best poltergeist cases, and to me, it's as good as any of them we've done, and it's just not as popular as any of them, but I think it's a fascinating story.
I agree.
Now, we've got a cool story that we had a listener. We were in the midst of doing our Patreon episode, which will be coming out August 1st. We have the listener's stories episodes. And in the process of doing the stories for that, we had a police officer from Tennessee tell his story. And I thought his story was so good, it needed to be on the main show.
Mm-hmm.
So I pulled it from the Patreon show, and I put it on this show.
Oh, good.
Because I thought everybody would enjoy it.
Good.
So let's take a second, and we're going to listen to Seth, a police officer from Tennessee.
Okay, we are joined on the phone with Seth from Tennessee. And Seth actually wrote me this story, and as soon as I heard this, I was like, man, this has to be part of the listener story that we do. Now, Seth, you're a police officer in Tennessee. No need to really go into much more detail as far as where you're at or anything. So we can keep this semi-anonymous. But you had a really cool paranormal experience during what should have been a routine call. Tell us a little bit about what happened that night.
It's been several years ago now. I've been an officer for going on 11 years, so this was probably pretty early in my career. And being low man on totem pole, you get assigned to midnight shift and work all night. This particular night, we got a call. It was right before the end of our shift. It was still dark out, but you could tell it was going to start getting daylight soon. And we got a call to go help some medics out at a house, and the only thing they gave us was that it was a 40-year-old male that was under fire. So we're kind of going, we run a little bit faster than ambulances do, so we get there typically a couple minutes before them. Don't really know what to expect, be told, going in, you know. So my partner, he was a minute or two ahead of me. He got there. I heard him on the radio saying, starting CPR. And, when I first walked into the house, you know, one of the things you do is you start kind of scanning the room to see kind of a head count, who's there, what's going on. You know, you start looking for blood or weapons or anything like that because you have no idea what you're about to deal with. You know? And, when I walked in, right as you go in the front door of this house, there's a stairwell that goes straight up, and there's a little landing. You go to the left or right to the bedrooms. At the bottom of the stairs, you got the living room and dining room. And so when I walked in, my partner was at the top of the stairs on the landing doing CPR on this guy. And standing kind of at their feet is this older lady and a young girl. You know, the lady looked like she was probably in her 70s, and little girl, like she's about 5 years old. So I'm seeing the guy, he's 40. I'm thinking, okay, this is his mom and his grandmother, or his mom and his daughter, you know. And almost immediately, an older guy meets me at the door. He's like, come here, let me show you what's going on. And so he starts kind of pulling me away to show me all the damage in the house, kind of telling me what was going on. It turned out the guy was schizophrenic and alcoholic, and he'd kind of been on a bender all night, just breaking stuff and hitting his head against the walls and just kind of tearing the house apart with his parents there, you know. So a couple minutes after that, mess shows up, they start to work on him, start to do CPR, and you know, I'm looking at the MS, I'm talking to the MS supervisor, and he's like, nah, he's dead. You know, we're kind of doing this as a show for the family at this point because we're not getting anything back as far as by anything, continuing CPR, and we're going to continue to work on him on the way to the hospital. So the supervisor goes over to the older couple and starts talking to them, and he's explaining that they need to pack a few things, but follow the ambulance down the hospital. And he really hasn't broken the news to them yet, you know. So they get packed up and everything. Well, at this point, it's already daylight outside. The sun's up. We've been there for, you know, probably about 20 minutes. And, my partner comes back downstairs. They get the guy in the ambulance, and his parents get in their car, and the ambulance pulls away, and the parents pull away. And I'm looking in the car, and I asked my partner, I said, well, where's his daughter? And he just kind of looked at me. He said, who? And I said, the little girl. I said, where's the little girl? I said, I didn't see her in the car with the parents. I said, and I know they don't let kids ride an ambulance, especially under that circumstance. And he said, I didn't see a little girl. He said, I was, you know, really wasn't paying attention. And, I thought, well, you know, they're panicked. They're worried about their son. They packed up in a hurry. You know, maybe she went in her bedroom and they forgot about her and they took her without her, you know, so the house was still unlocked. And, so he and I went up into the house just to kind of look around to see where she was at, you know, and we got inside and we went through every room in the house, and there was no little girl. There was no toys, no pictures of kids or anything like that, you know. So my partner, he asked me, he said, are you sure you saw it? I said, yeah. I mean, I remember looking, she was standing with the older lady, you know. Her hair was kind of messy, which I thought it's early in the morning. Just woke up, you know, she was wearing like a white pajama top, like pajama pants that were green and kind of like a flowery on the shirt and kind of, like I said, messy brown hair. He was like, you know, he was kind of looking at me funny, and he was like, are you sure? And I was like, dude, yeah, I'm pretty sure. But he and I talked about it, and he started kind of getting really creeped out by it, you know. I said, you know, I don't know what to tell you. And he said, all right. Well, he had to go down to the hospital to follow up with family anyway, and he called me on the way back down. And of course, by this point, it's the end of our shift, and we're kind of going back to the department and stuff, and he's on the way to follow up with them, and he called me on the way down. He was like, hey, you know, I've been thinking a lot about what you told me about that, you know, about that little girl. He said, what do you think that was? I said, man, I don't know, you know. He's like, are you going to tell the lieutenant? And I said, well, brother, I really wasn't hoping to take a psyche vow right here at the end of the shift, you know, and just kind of laughed it off. And he was like, all right, you know. So ultimately, I did talk to the lieutenant and told him what happened, and everybody seems kind of entertained by the story, you know. And so he told one of our captains, and I guess later on he hit me up, said that the captain thought the story was interesting enough, he went and followed up with the family to see if they had a daughter or anything like that. He said, no, I guess the guy lived alone with his family, with his mom and dad, and got diagnosed with schizophrenia in his early 20s and just kind of never moved out of the house, never got kids, anything like that. So that's pretty much it. That's where it kind of left off.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
That's a spooky story, though. Yeah. I mean, you guys are, like you said, you're trained to basically pay attention to your surroundings. And, you know, if you say you saw that, there's no doubt in my mind that's what you saw. So it's just kind of weird. I wonder with the history of the house, if there's something in that house, if it was something that the parents that had lived there, I wonder how long they'd been there, if it was maybe something from, you know, even way before then. It's a really cool story, though. I'm glad you told it.
Yeah, the house in the neighborhood, it's all pretty new development, you know, and what may have been on the land before, who knows, because most of it, they're dropping subdivision left and right. So the house itself isn't necessarily that old or anything like that, but
yeah. Oh man, that's really creepy.
That's my one good story.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty good.
And it happened right as she was brand new to the force. So,
gosh, you're probably like, oh Lord, what am I in for?
Yeah, you definitely don't plan for that kind of stuff.
No, not at all. So, but I guess he never in the end found out at all then about maybe where the little girl came from or anything about her at all then.
No, the only thing that I've ever, you know, like I said, it's my one ghost story, so I usually tell it a lot, you know, because people tend to like it. So I actually shared it on Jim Harold's Facebook a while back, and and lady that was she was a retired EMS worker, and she sent me a private message, and she said, you're not the only person that had this happen to him. She said, in my career, she said, I went to several death investigations, and she said, you know, we would look for family members and stuff, and that you would go to interview somebody that you saw when you came in, and you couldn't find them, and then nobody knows who you're talking about. You know, she said it happened to her a couple different times, and she said, I just kind of, in my mind, worked it out as, well, perhaps this is whatever helps you to the other side or something, you know, that just kind of takes a camouflage just to blend in at the moment, you know, in the event that it's seen or something, you know, which I thought that was kind of cool, but, you know, I don't know.
And let me ask you this, Seth, because I know it's off topic, but being a police officer, I know you see some crazy stuff. What's one of the funnier things that you've actually been called out to that just like totally caught you off guard?
Well, we had a guy one time, he called 911, said he'd just been held prisoner by a girlfriend and his other girlfriend. And, so we get out there and the guy is like sitting in his car in the street and he's telling us this story. He's like, yeah, they tied me up. They beat me. They did all this stuff. And I'm like, Dick, why are you sitting in front of their house in your car? Why are you, why are you calling us from here? Why are you not calling us from 10 miles down the road where you're trying to get away from it? You know, and he's like, you know, they videoed it. And so we go in and we talk to the two women and they're like, yeah, you know, we just kind of coincidentally met and discovered we were both dating the same guy. And, you know, we just had him over to confront him, but we didn't do anything to him. You know, it's like, dude, he's telling a pretty crazy story and you're saying, you're acting like you guys confronted him on it, you know? So we're out there for a little while and ultimately end up finding the video. And, it was funny and scary at the same time. Cause even when you're watching it, you know the guy's alive, but you're like, okay, this is where they kill him, you know? And so one of them, I guess, came to the store in lingerie and took him to the bedroom and they stripped him off naked and tied him to the bed. And another one popped out of the closet and they commenced to beating him and slapping him and all that stuff. So it was pretty crazy So yeah, you really don't know, you know, you hear kind of part of the story going in, and then when you find out the rest.
Yeah.
The big cup, a little disturbing, but.
Yeah. Boy got busted big time. That's
I just somehow knew that you would have some kind of a funny story, even though you had no clue I was going to ask. I knew you would have one right off the top of your head.
Yeah, it's I've probably got several more over the years, but that one always kind of pops to the top there.
Well, Seth, we greatly appreciate you coming on the show, and we definitely appreciate what you do for your community.
Yes.
And like I said, you guys, it doesn't matter what size town it is. It doesn't matter any of that stuff. Every time you guys go out, you put your life on the line, and that doesn't get past us. We greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Very much.
Yeah, God bless you, honey.
Thank you so much for listening, and like I said, maybe we'll get you back on again to hear some of these other funny stories.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a problem.
Thank you, Seth.
Thanks, Seth.
Thank you.
See, that's what I like about having police officers, because I'm sure there's a bunch of them that have stories similar to that where they've seen something that they just can't explain.
Oh, I'm sure, I think it's interesting how he's seen that little girl, but nobody else did. So I'm sure on their jobs that they do, they see all kinds of things, and they probably don't tell anybody about them.
No, they probably don't. I know when Andrea Whitney was on the show talking about the police officer in the town she was in, that I remember saying that there was like a piano or something up in the window.
Yes.
Or wasn't a piano. It was like a stand-up bass or something. And she said that the police officer would go by and you could see it in the window. And then you go back in and it's not there. And it was a vacant place.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sure that there's plenty of stories like that. That would actually probably make a cool podcast of itself. Yes. Just police stories. So.
Oh, yeah. That's true. We ought to work on that.
Well, this isn't a police story, but I wanted to do something for our military. And I've got a cool little story that goes back to Afghanistan. I don't have a date on this, but what we got two paratroopers named Jackson and Paints. And they're with the 2nd Battalion, the 504th Parachute Infantry Regiment. And they claim that they heard a shrill noise over top of the radio one day. They were at a Outlook booth. Or I said booth, but it's not really a booth. It's a guard tower.
Mm-hmm.
And they heard this over the radio, and it was similar to laughter. And they start checking with the other bases in Afghanistan and the area they're at, and they find out that nobody else heard that. It was just them. So then they're manning this guard tower, right? And it overlooks a graveyard. And it was rumored to be haunted by a little girl. The problem was that a lot of people have claimed to see her, but you can only see her when you've got, like, the night vision goggles on.
Oh.
So if you've got the night vision, you could see her. She supposedly walks the street alongside a goat.
Oh.
And, you know, you can see the image of her and everything, and as soon as you take your night vision goggles off, there's nothing there.
She's not there.
Yeah, there's nothing there. So, like I said, a lot of the past soldiers have ever seen it, and when they take their goggles off, it's just an empty road after that. Well, one night, they swear that you could see her image of her mm-hmm. up on the balcony of the post. Well, the next night, Jackson and Painter were on top of the guard tower. And they could clearly hear footsteps behind them on this little trap door that led to the middle level of the tower. Now, both of them were kind of huddled around the radio up there on the top floor. And Jackson reluctantly decided to go check it out because he was like, we got to figure out what's going on. We're hearing all these noises. We're supposed to be the only ones here. So he goes checking around the top level where they're at. And another tower radioed to them to say that they saw a 3-foot-tall figure down on the first floor.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Their shift was supposed to end, like, right around then. And then they get a call saying they were going to be stuck there for another 2 hours before their people could get there.
Oh, man.
But nothing else happened. And Jackson and Paints both said that they never felt threatened,
mm-hmm.
Never felt like they were any kind of danger. And even though they were scared to death, they still had to work there for 2 more weeks. But they had no occurrences over the 2 weeks.
So those two are the only one, not the reliefs, didn't see the little girl at all or
anything? There were people in the past
that had seen her.
But Jackson and Painter were the only ones that had this situation.
Wow, that's so interesting.
So, well, I like doing some stories on the military, and hopefully I can dig up some more.
Yeah.
I know that wasn't the longest of all stories or anything, but that's what we got. Unfortunately, we have to end tonight's show on a very serious note. You know, we tell you guys all the time that we consider you to be family. Some of you listeners out there, we get a chance to talk to a little more than others. Some of you we talk to on a really regular basis. Nick Hall is one of those listeners. In the last month, Nick and I have become a little bit closer talking through social media. He lives basically an hour and a half away from where we live. We are both big UK fans, so we talk about maybe even hooking up for a football game. Nick was just in town a couple of days ago on Tuesday of last week for a job interview, and if I had been in town, we would have hooked up and done lunch or something. So when we say we think of you guys as family, we mean that, and we developed a lot of great friends through this podcast, and I consider Nick to be one of those friends. You may remember a couple of weeks ago, we did a shout-out to Nick, and we had talked about his brother who had passed away 9 years ago, that he felt like he was always around, and July was his birthday, and he wanted us to give a heavenly birthday to his brother Chris, which we did. I bring that up because, unfortunately, Nick Hall's family has been rocked by tragedy this past Thursday. This is a very hard story to tell. Especially since I've really gotten to know Nick, and it just makes it harder to accept. But Nick's wife, Katie, daughter, Michaela, son, Jackson, and daughter, Brianna, were involved in a horrible accident, automobile accident, on Thursday. His wife, Katie, and daughter, Michaela, suffered major injuries that are going to require several surgeries before they're going to be back to normal. Youngest son is going to be fine, had, you know, some minor injuries comparatively speaking. Unfortunately, 8-year-old Brianna did not survive the accident. When I reached out as soon as I heard the news to Nick to express my condolences, he asked if we would mention her on the show. I can't begin to imagine the pain and anguish that this family is going through right now. It's just the thought of it is gut-wrenching. And I've got the utmost respect for what this man has to do and what his wife and daughters have to do and go through over the next couple of months. To the Hall family, you have our thoughts, prayers, positive vibes, and we hope and pray that one day all of you guys can be completely healed physically, spiritually, and mentally. And to heaven's newest angel, Brianna Chris Hall, you love to dance and sing, and you definitely endured more than your share of adversity during your short time on this earth. Spread your newly found angel wings, little princess, and go rest high on that mountain.
Only you gathered round your grave to grieve. Wish I could see angels' faces when they